Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics Show and Podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and today is the second of two consecutive weeks where we're taking a look at the British political landscape. Why are we doing that? Because it seems like British politics is kind of a precursor to what happens here. A couple of examples of the Brexit referendum occurred right before Donald Trump was elected, and an incumbent British government was defeated last year, largely over the issue of inflation before the incumbent administration here in the United States fell short. And we're very interested in a region in Britain that's been pretty important in elections called the Red Wall, which is very similar to our Heartland region here of Obama-Trump voters. So my guest this week is, I'm very pleased to have on, he's a political columnist for The Times, and he's also the co-author of a book called Get In, The Inside Story of Labor Under Starmer. Outstanding book and has a lot of applications here, I think, to the United States. Patrick McGuire, welcome, and thank you for being my guest.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be on, and I'm really looking forward to talking.
Well, for those listeners who you know, maybe don't have an awareness that you and I obviously share, set the stage a little bit for the Labour Party, where it was at after their 19 election, kind of some of the internal dynamics. So that would give some good background to leading up to the election, the most recent election.
Well, after 2019, Robin, the Labour Party was in, it's no exaggeration to say, an existential and generational crisis, because the way politics works in the UK, obviously we have a parliamentary system, but it's broadly analogous really to your system. We have two parties that share power, but really the default in Britain is that the Conservative Party are our default party of government, and it's an exception if the Labour Party win power. But 2019, you have four consecutive elections, 2010, 2015, 2017, and then 2019, when the Labour Party loses all four of those elections. And why 2019 was significant was because, you know, you're talking about the parallels between British politics and American politics. You know, effectively in UK politics, our version of Bernie Sanders, Jeremy Corbyn, won the leadership of the Labour Party after the more centrist wing of the Labour Party lost the election in 2015. 2017, we had a general election where they defied expectations and gained seats, denying the Tories a majority. But in 2019, they were absolutely slaughtered. They won their lowest number of seats since 1935. And there were serious questions, given that, you know, not unlike what we saw in 2016 in the US and at the last election, you know, the Red Wall, our version of the Rust Belt, post-industrial Britain in the North and Midlands of England, and voted wholesale for the Conservative Party. That was an unthinkable thing under our own sort of charismatic populist with funny hair, Boris Johnson. And there were serious questions in 2019 what the Labour Party was for. You know, the radical left had singularly failed in its conviction that economic radicalism would win back those constituencies. It didn't. And so in 2019, the 13th of December 2019, the day after that general election, Boris Johnson And the Conservatives have done the unthinkable. They've won post-industrial England. They've won the sort of former, you know, steelworking and coal mining towns that were the bedrock of Labour support, were the very towns the Labour Party had been founded to represent. They were now voting Conservative. And the big question mark hanging over the Labour Party was, will they ever win back those white working class, post-industrial, predominantly male voters who had always voted Labour, increasingly reluctantly, they hated the Conservative Party, but having voted for Brexit, that opened up a whole new world of political possibility for them. And then, almost unthinkably, they'd given Boris Johnson and the Conservative Party a landslide majority. And the Labour Party just had no idea what it was going to do in that scenario. So it was, and it was certainly, you know, that morning in 2019, the question was, will the Labour Party survive as a going concern? You know, I certainly, as a political journalist, did not expect to be having conversations in 2025 about how the Labour Party won its own landslide majority only 5 years later.
The parallel, there's obviously differences, but there's strong parallels here. The Democrats are right now in the United States kind of in that same position the Labour Party was in 20. They're split with a moderate faction and a more far-left progressive faction. And real questions about the future. And also Donald Trump winning the Rust Belt states and a lot of Obama-Trump counties. So there's some obvious parallels, which gives us some interest here, especially in our region. So you set the stage really well for our listeners, Patrick. And my next question is, this book mentions Keir Starmer, who of course now is the prime minister. But I would argue the protagonist of this book is a man named Morgan McSweeney. You refer to him not as the Irishman, not the guy in the Scorsese movie, but share with our listeners a little bit who this guy is and what role he played and how he kind of slowly became a major player in British politics. I think this is very interesting and worth listening to for lessons learned over here as well.
Well, you're absolutely right to say he is the real protagonist of our book, or at least the joint protagonist with the man who is now prime minister. I mean, the interesting thing about Morgan McSweeney is, some people say, you're not the first person to have noticed that parallel with the Scorsese film, and some people would say he's deployed a sort of similar methodology and style of interpersonal interaction, there's political gangsterism. But anyway, to understand Morgan McSweeney, it's not to understand the Labour Party in British politics. And again, anyone who's familiar with democratic politics will recognise this sort of story, in that the story of Labour politics in Britain, even when it wins a landslide majority, particularly after 1997 when Tony Blair won his massive landslide, unprecedented landslide, was there was always this undertow of Labour is losing touch with the people it was founded to represent, i.e. the white working class, the white working class voters of industrial England, Scotland and Wales. That became only the more acute as Tony Blair's government cycled through the three elections it won after 2005, 2010, Gordon Brown, Tony Blair's successor lost. And what was consistent, that election 2015, 2017, was Labour was gradually having its working class base, traditional working class base, eroding. And Morgan McSweeney, unusually, as you say, an Irishman in British politics, had come over here at 17 from County Cork on a bus to stay with an aunt. Very familiar story in British and Irish migration. But he sort of accidentally, as a student, ended up working for the Labour Party. And he started working for the Labour Party in the early 2000s, just at the point where Tony Blair's government, despite being sort of electorally untouchable, it was winning massive majorities, but out there in the country, it was losing touch with its voters. It was losing voters over the Iraq War in London. It was losing votes in East London to a far-right party called the British National Party, and the white working class over immigration and much else besides. It was losing basically everywhere. It was losing voters on the liberal left. It was losing voters in local councils, mayoralties that were traditionally its strongest seats. And Morgan McSweeney is a guy who sort of is never at the top rank of New Labour politics or Blairite politics, but he's spent sort of a decade and a half observing how New Labour fails. And when Jeremy Corbyn wins in 2015, those followers, those disciples of Tony Blair and Gordon Brown, they panic. They think, God, the radical left, the people we were trying to keep in what they used to call the sealed tomb. You know, they're always part of the Labour Party, but they're trying to seal them in a tomb so they can never get out and they'd eventually die out. God, they're running the show. What do we do? Lots of them said in that scenario, well, it's over. The show's over. We need to quit the Labour Party. And some people did split from the Labour Party and found a new party called Change UK, based on the stories that happened in the 1980s in Britain when the radical left were running the Labour Party or were promising the Labour Party. Mrs. Thatcher was unassailable, and they found something called the Social Democratic Party. So Labour was going through this big psychodrama. What had been the establishment of the Labour Party was torn between leaving or staying and basically admonishing the members of the Labour Party, the grassroots members of the Labour Party who voted for Jeremy Corbyn, you know, similar to sort of primary voters who might have voted for Bernie Sanders or whoever. And basically they were saying, you're mad, you're Marxist, you're Trotskyist, you don't get it. And Morgan McSweeney is sort of sat there with a lot of money from donors who thought, well, actually, we want to save the Labour Party, but we don't quite know how. And Morgan McSweeney, this organiser who has seen firsthand how, one, the Labour Party can lose touch with its voters, be that the radical left in a South London council called Lambeth, which was briefly run by Trotskyists in the 1980s. An absolutely disastrous experiment led to a child abuse scandal in local council children's homes. Again, he's seen it in East London, you know, former industrial seat where Ford used to make cars in a place called Dagenham in East London, where immigration and deindustrialization have such disastrous consequences that the far right, you know, basically a neo-Nazi party was on the rise. He had studied very closely how Labour loses touch with people when it sort of ignores the voters and doesn't tell them what they want. I think sort of sat there running this sort of the closest thing we have to a super PAC in Britain called Labour Together. And he's thinking, well, look, the Labour Party isn't lost. We basically just need to listen to what the electorate, i.e. members of the Labour Party, are saying to us. And they were saying, look, we need a Labour Party that, unlike Tony Blair, is willing to stand up for economic radicalism, is willing to sort of listen to what people on the left of British politics are saying and sort of channel that. And unlike his sort of fellow travellers, he's not saying the Labour Party's doomed. He's not saying the members are stupid. He is sat there studying and polling. And this is quite rare in British politics, polling individual paid-up members of a political party rather than the votes at large and working out what it is that will win back the Labour Party for the moderates. And eventually he settles on a relatively new MP, the former director of public prosecutions in Britain, a man called Sir Keir Starmer, former human rights lawyer, just been elected to a seat in North London. He's the Labour Party's Brexit spokesperson, so he's standing up against Brexit on behalf of the Labour Party, and he identifies this sort of political neophyte, and he thinks, I can tell this knight of the realm, used to run the Crown Prosecution Service, has considerable political ambition. He's sober, he's sensible, but there's a streak of radicalism in him. He's saying what Labour Party members want, and yet he looks like he'll win an election. I'm not going to stage a putsch on Jeremy Corbyn and the radical left of the Labour Party. I'm going to build this guy up so he's a natural successor to Jeremy Corbyn when the inevitable election loss happens. And that is indeed where they find themselves on that morning I mentioned before, 30th of December 2019. Everybody is scrambling around thinking, who's going to be the next leader of the Labour Party? But Morgan McSweeney and Keir Starmer know, because of all the work Morgan McSweeney's put in, because of that quite singular analytical perspective, it's going to be him.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Quad Cities NPR. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and I'm delighted to have as my guest today, Patrick McGuire. He's a political columnist for The Times, in Britain. He's also the co-author of a book about the most recent British election and the dynamics that occurred to help turn things around for the Labour Party. The book's called Get In, The Inside Story of Labour Under Starmer. His co-author's Gabriel Pogren. Patrick's been talking a little bit about laying the landscape here of British politics leading up to Labour's win last year, in particular a gentleman named Morgan McSweeney, who played a big role. I found it fascinating, of all the door knocking he did as well. He did polling, but and I think this is where the Democrats in the United States have lost touch, where just going out and knocking doors and listening to people, what they say and how they say it, it seems like the how people talk is as big as the thing as the policy on both sides of the pond. Is that a fair assessment, Patrick? Or what's your thoughts?
I mean, Robin, you are probably familiar with a man called Arne Graf, and your listeners, where you are, will remember Arne Graf, one of Obama's great mentors in community organizing. And Arne Graf actually came over and worked for the Labour Party in the period between 2010 and 2015. And one of Morgan McSweeney's formative moments is he sort of sat down with Arne Graf once and he said, you know, what's your advice? Because the Labour Party is losing touch with the community that was founded to represent. And Arne Graf's advice was always, and you knock on somebody's door and you say, what's bothering you? And they will speak and you listen. Don't pretend to listen. Don't listen and then say, very interesting, what you actually mean is my policy obsessions. You listen and you think about it and you reflect it. I mean, that was the key insight Morgan McSweeney had taken, particularly from, you know, you mentioned door knocking. The most sort of formative experience was knocking on doors during, 2010, 2009, 2008 in East London, that place called Dagenham I mentioned, where Labour was facing this big existential and terrifying question of how do we stop our core vote going to the far right? And what he did is he went from door to door, listened to them, and whereas sort of the Labour Party in Westminster MPs thought, oh, they're voting for the BNP, what they want is us to say nasty things about migrants. You know, local MPs would say, the native-born indigenous population is being sold out to migrants, stuff like that. I mean, I paraphrase, but not particularly heavily. What Morgan McSweeney heard was this estate, this housing estate, this housing project is a mess. You know, there are dirty mattresses and piles of rubbish in my neighbour's garden. So Morgan McSweeney took that away and thought, well, how do we solve that problem? You know, it doesn't necessarily have to mean we have to mimic the far right on racism. What it means is, well, hang on, we work out who owns that house. Oh, it's an absentee landlord who's running it as a sort of bedsit complex for African migrants. What you don't do is you don't attack the migrants. You say, well, hang on, we're going to find the landlord. We're going to clear the rubbish from those eyesore gardens, as he called it. And it was listening that meant, you know, there were tangible results. And by the time that council, that local area came up for re-election again, the BNP lost all of its seats because Morgan McSweeney had gone from house to house. He had listened. We hadn't just heard, we hate migrants. We've heard, you know, these things are symptomatic of problems politicians can solve. Whereas politicians in Westminster who weren't putting those hours in, who didn't live in the seats they represented, would think, oh, well, there's an easy answer here. We just need to amplify the criticisms we're hearing from the far right, which was disastrous. But as you say, there was no substitute. And it's similar, you know, it's not quite knocking on doors, but suppose it is. It's, you know, it's where other Labour politicians between 2015 and 2019, their reflex was to say, oh, the problem with the Labour Party membership is it's not the membership we know. It is interlopers, entryists, Marxist extremists. He said, no, what we're going to do is we're going to listen to these people. We're going to poll them. We're going to work out what they think. And then we will understand their values, not necessarily saying that anyone they want, but we will appreciate what it is they're critiquing the Labour Party and we will respond to it properly. And that is quite a rare thing in British politics, you know, because so much of it is muscle memory, so much of it is, this is our sort of seat, this is your sort of seat. And when challenges happen, that sort of defy those rules, people are always wrong-footed. But sort of Morgan Schlink, I think, really unique position to understand the value of listening, that lesson he learned from Arne Graff all those years ago.
That's really insightful, I think, for what's going on over here. I, in the interest of time, let's move forward a little bit. Starmer was successful in this race. It wasn't even close. Did w w was Labour successful in winning some of these voters back?
It's a really interesting question. So, if you look at the map, you would think yes, because all of those seats that had tipped blue in 2019, had voted for Boris Johnson's Conservative Party, were red. Every single seat bar one or two or three that had voted Tory in 2019 voted for the Labour Party. But if you dig a little deeper, what actually happened was the Conservative Party, who looked so unassailable in 2019, royally screwed up. They burned through three prime ministers in that term. They crashed the economy. They mishandled their response to COVID. Boris Johnson, who looked like he had the Midas touch, blew a sort of once-in-a-generation chance to redraw the political map of Britain. In doing so, and this is where the sort of our paths diverge, because our parliamentary system allows for this. You know, we have a sort of populist right challenger led by a very charismatic politician, Mr. Brexit, Nigel Farage, great friend of the president, who split the Conservative vote so successfully that Labour actually didn't add that too many votes in its overall vote share or in the seats we were talking about. Actually, what happened was the vote on the right was split. Yes, you know, you could say it's not too dissimilar in some places to 1992 and Ross Perot and George H.W. Bush. But the net result was the Labour Party actually won fewer votes percentage-wise and in raw numbers than they had in the Jeremy Corbyn in 2019. But they won in the right places, and they won on a split sort of right-wing vote and came through the middle. Labour's vote was very efficient. They knew how to campaign. Their own vote held steady. They spot on a few votes here and there. But it was mainly the split on the right that delivered them that majority. And I think now the Labour government's had a very, very tricky first 10 months. We're seeing the upside of it, which is there's no great love for the Labour Party, even if its image had been thoroughly rehabilitated by Keir Starmer and Morgan Schlink. But they hadn't didn't need a huge amount of work in convincing voters to come over to their side. They sort of won by default. And that was very tricky indeed.
So it sounds like, and there are differences in our, you know, two systems, obviously, parliamentary and our representative democracy, but there was noticeable movement of some of these voters back to Labour. Do you think it's going to be lasting? And I know Britain just had some local elections last week, which were kind of surprising. If you could answer that question in the context of what happened last week as well, are these voters back to the Labour Party, or are they going to be continue to be up for grabs?
They're very much up for grabs. So I think that the story of our election this year is one of our election system in the past 10 years is one of extreme volatility of them completely up for grabs. So what happened? We had a round of local elections last week. The sort of the closest thing I guess we would have to midterms and gubernatorial elections. You know, we had a round of mayoral elections there, but our mayors are for regions rather than cities. And county council elections, so you know, statewide elections. And it was Nigel Farage's party, also in the UK, who absolutely swept the ball. And I think that was a symptom of extreme disillusionment with mainstream politics. It's, you know, Keir Starmer may have convinced him that, you know, he was the answer. You know, Labour for the first time in the best part of a decade, well, 15 years, it's credible to get the Tories out, but he hasn't yet convinced them that he can govern well. You know, Britons are now pulling the lever mark. You know, we don't like this. And their party allegiance is now much, much looser. Which, you know, which means actually, you know, we're just speaking to a sort of senior Labour person who isn't panicking about those results, even though, you know, reform are sweeping the board, you know, they're putting the Tories out of business. Labour's heartlands that sort of have stayed with them, even in the bleakest moments of the past 10 years, are now falling wholesale to the radical right and reform UK. But that sort of volatility, that sort of those who are impatient, they're fickle. That gives some people hope they might swing back. Or alternatively, 2019, 2024 might have been false storms. We might now be seeing actually these people now have a home on the radical right. It's not too similar to the Trump program of, it's culturally right wing, it's right populist, but on questions of domestic industries, unionized labor, etc., etc. It's not a straight sort of hard right party. It's sort of much more synthetic. It's much subtler than that. It's sort of very, I think you recognize a lot of JD Vance in the Reform UK program. It's sort of, designed for those who are just belting sort of seats. So it's dangerous. And I think in a way, the story of the Keir Starmer story is, he made the Labour Party, which offended so many voters, very inoffensive. And I thought sort of a safe vessel for taking, for taking people back. But I don't think he sated that desire for sort of change and anger in the political system that we're now seeing expressed through the populist right. And then already here, we are seeing people in the Labour Party saying, we need to go further and faster and reflecting the views of those people. And I imagine it's a very similar debate happening in the Rust Belt states saying, look, we are not listening to people, we are aliens to these people. And it's a funny debate to be having after Labour with a landslide. It's sort of, it's pretty loveless landslide. So the debate the Democratic Party was having was exactly the same debate the Labour Party is now having, despite having won that big electoral victory.
Interesting. I just have 1 minute left, Patrick. If there's one thing you think, and I know you follow politics over here, obviously not as close as Britain, but if there's one thing you think Democrats should take away from the British elections, one lesson to help them right now as they kind of regain their footing, what would it be?
Well, I think last week proves that if you win on the back of an unpopular incumbent, and I suppose Joe Biden could tell you that, that is not necessarily a ringing endorsement of you. You still need to do the hard work, the hard yards of thinking about why those votes have abandoned you in the first place. And then don't be surprised if you haven't done the work, if you default to your previous obsessions, if you lose sight of delivering for those voters in a tangible way. Don't be surprised if they then surprise you again at the next cycle. That's the key thing. You need to keep listening. You can never panic to win because who's to say, like in 2020, you haven't been elected off the back of fleeting disgust with an incumbent and, still in 4 years' time, they say, actually, we still don't like the Democratic Party or whoever you are. So it's the work of listening still needs to happen. And there are no shortcuts to that lasting cultural change. I think the Labour Party is discovering that now. And I think the Democratic Party have learned the hard way, a lesson the Labour Party may yet learn in 4 years' time here.
Fascinating stuff, Patrick. Thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're very busy with our time difference and all. I really appreciate you taking the time. Again, Patrick McGuire has been my guest today. He's the co-author of a great book on the British election and the comeback of Labour called Get In, The Inside Story of Labour Under Starmer. I recommend it. It's very readable, and I think listeners will get the parallels. But from American politics to British politics. Patrick, again, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you very much, Robin. Pleasure to meet you.
You've been listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.